Next case is 97-967, State of Ohio versus Lenore Plantek. Mr. Cordes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor. I am John Cordes, Assistant Prosecuting Attorney of Lynn County, here on behalf of the State of Ohio. I intend to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case comes before you on a conflict, certification of conflict of the United Judicial Lynn County Court of Appeals. The case at hand is in conflict with the case of State versus Fulmer, which is the 12th District Court of Appeals on Butler County. The issue that comes before you today is whether Revised Code 29-1921, which deals with non-support dependents, includes in its definition of the term adequate support, medical care, food, clothing, shelter, and so on. The facts of this case are important in some respect, and that is that the deceased victim, Rosella Plantek, was a 79-year-old woman. She lived with the appellee defendant in this case, Lenore Plantek. Lenore was the deceased's daughter and was charged both statutorily with the support and factually was the caretaker for Rosella, her mother. The evidence presented that the defendant appellee allowed, in her presence and with her knowledge, her mother basically dropped dead in their home. The causes of death, the medical findings show that there was organized lumbar pneumonia due to gross neglect. In other words, her breathing space, her lung was filled with actual pneumonia. She had difficulty breathing. This, along with the other findings of gangrenous necrosis of the skin and subcutaneous tissues of the right hip due to both gross neglect, ulcers of the right hip due to gross neglect, acute osteomyelitis of the right femur from gross neglect.
Mr. Cordes.
Yes.
It's a dreadful scenario, for sure. The question I have is, in this particular case that you present to us, we have a person held responsible by the statute for, and the question becomes for what, but for support, living in the home with the parent. And I'm questioning in light of what the breadth of that word's adequate support, or that phrase adequate support, I'm questioning whether or not someone could violate that law and be criminally liable who, for instance, lives in another state, in another, you know, country, who sends checks, for instance, but is unable to assist the parent in converting that financial support to medical care. Seems to me a lot of difficulty in how you would really enforce a statute like this against folks who, and what level of care is adequate. I mean, there's a lot of problems with the position.
I understand your question, and my response would be that is why I think the facts of this particular case are significant. In this case, we did have someone who was living in the home and statutorily was charged and factually was charged.
But isn't our role here to discern what the statute means?
I understand.
Not whether it's well suited for this particular case.
I understand that. And my response to that question would be that in this particular case, and in regard to any case, the statute must be determined what the term adequate support means.
How do we do that? What in our role as appellate judges?
Well, I think first of all, as I have laid out in my brief, you have to look at if there are any statutory definitions of such. And the statutory definition that I have searched for would be present in Revised Code Section 29, 29-19, 21, or any other 29 section, and there isn't.
Right.
I then went to the corresponding section, and I would ask this court to do that also, which would be Title 31, which is the Domestic Relations Statute. In the Domestic Relations Statute, there is no clear definition of what adequate support is. Failing to find a definition in those two statutes, Rule 1.42 would then reason that this court and others should then give the statute its clear meaning and it's properly in the context of words and phrases shall be read in context and construed according to rules of grammar and common usage.
And one other maxim that applies is that we must construe this strictly against the state. Right? Okay.
That is a maxim that is to be instituted in all criminal cases.
How do you respond to the appellee's argument that point 21 deals only with non-support and contains no elements of neglect or abuse? How do you respond to that?
My response would be that the appellee and the Ninth Judicial Court of Appeals garnered that information from a committee note. And it's been well reasoned, and I'm not going to cite a lot of precedents for it, that committee notes are not controlled. They are there to give guidance where guidance could be gained from it, but they're not controlled. Now, in the statute itself, as I've laid out in my brief, I'm sure the court's aware, there is nothing in the statute that says financial support is the only support that is included within this non-support dependence. The committee note goes on to state, and I would reason that the committee note in some ways hurts the state's case in this matter, obviously.
How does it hurt the state's case?
Well, it hurts the state's case because that committee note could be interpreted as it has been by the Ninth Judicial Court of Appeals in stating that we're not going to look for or require anything but financial.
But when you look at 22, which is referenced in that committee note, doesn't that deal solely with children and handicapped children? Is there anything?
That's an argument that I have advanced in my brief, and that is that committee note also, I think, can be shown to say that the legislature thinks abuse and neglect is a crime in criminal conduct. And furthermore, in that committee note, they have gone on to say that it is more serious than just financial non-support. And therefore, what they have done, the legislature hasn't done this, whoever wrote the committee note says that we are not going to include in the endangering children statute abuse and neglect. And I would just argue a side note to that, that the term abandonment is right in the statute. So I'll come back to that later. But what the committee note says is we are not going to look for abuse or neglect because we think that's more serious, and that is contained in the next following statute, the endangering children statute.
Yeah, but we, just to follow up on that, where is there another statute that deals with that when you're talking about an each of the parent?
There is not. I mean, you have a couple classifications of dependents. And dependents are just that. They're for people who are dependent upon others for their daily care, living, proper care, food, clothing, all of those factors that I have put in my brief. And the committee note seems to say that it's going to create a disparate impact upon at least one class of victim, or one class of dependents, who then become victims. They went on to say that we're not going to look for non-financial support in this particular statute because the next statute covers it. But the next statute only covers children who are dependents. It doesn't cover the converse of that, and that are aged or infirm dependents. And clearly this court has followed the enlightened path in Castle versus Castle before, and in other cases where it has said that we as citizens should have a concern for our children and for our aged or infirm adults. Now, taking that one step further, again, looking for the definition of what adequate support is, the state has cited a number of cases, State versus Holder being one of them, which is in conflict with this. And in that case, the case is on all fours with this case, where it has found that adequate support includes food, clothing, shelter, and medical care. In Butel, the necessary food, medical care was clearly included within adequate support.
Do those refer to minors?
Butel does not.
Aren't all those definitions referring to minors?
No, I don't believe they are. The definitions that you take from 3113.04, which will be my next argument, in some ways applies to minors because it comes under the support statute, but clearly,
The way you're trying to stretch your argument is that it sounds to me like you need a new statute to cover this situation.
Well, that would be the belief, and that would be the argument if this court were to follow the committee notes. And I'm asking this court not to follow the committee notes in respect that the committee notes say that only financial support is intended. And no, again, nowhere in the statute does it say that. That has come from this committee.
Then isn't this a problem for the legislature and not for the court?
Well, it may well be a problem for the legislature. What we do have is a dead 79-year-old individual who the state believes could and should be protected by a non-supported defendant statute because the defendant, Kelly, in this case, has a duty. Statutory duty provide care, veterans to provide adequate care.
That's the important point you make there, counsel.
Yes.
Nowhere in that statute does it use the word care. And care, if it ever said care, it says that, you know, it cares. That I think that that's so significant.
Adequate support.
Yeah, but, and it's interesting because it would seem so very, it would be such the clarity of the word care would get us right where we want to go. In fact, care is used in the following statute, right? In the endangered children.
313.
Yeah.
4, yes.
Right. But
and
we don't
the
have
fact
to.
That you brought up, the question you brought up about the individual being away in Florida and sending checks, the converse of that would be the individual who doesn't necessarily lock their father. If I were to allow my elderly father to sit in his room and rot away, I'm not giving medical care, but I know that he needs medical care for purposes of some type of inheritance. Certainly I have violated the duty. Right now, there is no statute out there.
We know you've violated a moral duty. We might all agree on that. But the question, do we have a statute in place? This is the one you
this
think.
This is the statute. Again, I would go back to in peri materia, that concept of statutory construction, 3113.04, says, and I'm not, that's just not a stretch, that's because that deals directly with the statute at hand, because that statute, 3113.04, says that the sentence, it deals with the sentence that is imposed pursuant to 2919.21. The code section that we're talking about, it says that type of sentence can be suspended if the defendant, conditioned upon the person who will furnish the child or other dependent, it doesn't say just child. So in answer to Justice Sweeney's question, 3113.04 does not deal with just children, it deals with all dependents. Condition that the person will furnish the child or other dependent with necessary or proper home care, food, and clothing. Care obviously would encompass medical care.
Counsel, would this case fit factually under the phrase abandoned, which is also part of the statute, or that
well,
they live together still?
I looked up the definition of abandoned and provided that to forsake or desert in spite of allegiance or duty or responsibility. I certainly believe that abandonment would fit in this situation. However, I am here to argue to you that adequate support also means medical care. I would reserve the balance.
Thank you, Mr. Court. Mr. Haynes.
Please, the court, Your Honors. I represent Lenore Blontek. My name is John Haynes. Obviously, I'm here to enhance and stress the Ninth District Court of Appeals as having made the right decision in this case. The problem in this case is that there's just very few things that Mr. Court and I can rely on to argue. There's just the Holder case and, of course, the Plante case. The other problem with this case is, as Justice Cook has pointed out, the consequences in this case were awful. But I think I should spend just a short time telling you, as I have in my brief and Plantec did not abandon her mother. Lenore Plantec left a very, very good job to come home and take care of her parents. The witnesses in the case and the record in the case would indicate that she took wonderful care of her mother in the sense that she fed her, she kept a wonderful house for her, she spent her own money and not her mother's money. And I think one of the things that people should realize is that Lenore Plantec is from an old world family. The mother did not believe in medical care, did not believe in medical treatment. She was very controlling of her daughter. And this is a situation where when she died of basic bed sores that had gotten out of hand, but she wouldn't go to the hospital, she wouldn't seek medical treatment. And Lenore, being an old world daughter, said, okay, fine, I'm not going to push it.
The trial court found her guilty, though. So the court may not have believed that. We'd have to, for purposes of argument here, we don't need to believe that for you to prevail, or
no,
do we, counsel?
No, what we need to believe is that financially Lenore Plantec supported her mother. The state will, I'm sure, believe that. The Court of Appeals said that, and that's certainly the proof that was in the lower court trial. There's no question that she financially supported her mother.
Even that has to be explored a bit. What does it mean to financially support someone who is absolutely incapable? I think the statute uses that, incapable of converting money to care or food or, you know, if what's it mean to financially support? Does it mean to provide the food?
Provide housing.
Okay, so
she provided a wonderful house, and it was fully air-conditioned, and it was sited, and it was very secure.
And to provide financially, so it's not much of a stretch if that's how we discern adequate financial support, by really provision of the necessities. It's not much of a stretch to go beyond the food and the roof to minimal medical care.
If we're to take the state's argument here, the stretch is horrendous for all of us in this room, all adult children in this room. For the state to prevail with this court in the interpretation of this statute, the ramifications are unbelievable.
Well, did the coroner also find, when he did the autopsy, that there were fractured bones that had healed? I mean, this is not just you commented on the fact that this woman had bed sores and this led to her death. Wasn't there tremendous other medical implications involved?
Your Honor, a number of years before Lenore Plantec's mother, Rosella, had fallen and had broken her arm, she refused medical treatment. This was when she was five. And by the way, when she died, she was ambulatory. She didn't have any problem with her faculties. She just wasn't able to drive the car and go to the bank.
Well, it appears that
she let her arm.
But it appears that she was not even able to get into the bathroom by herself.
She was able to walk around with the help of her daughter at that point. Yes. Yes. But the actual cause of death had nothing to do with the broken arm that healed 15 years before.
Well, I think that they found numerous healed fractures. It was not just one.
But the point I would like to make is that there are two points here that the appellee wants to enhance today. First is that the statute is a criminal non-support statute. And I'm sure when the legislature passed this statute, they had no idea that we'd be here talking about medical care for one's aged or infirm parent. This is the old deadbeat dad statute that people were prosecuted on when they would not pay child support ordered by a domestic relations court. That's what this statute was originally intended for.
Mr. Haynes, In getting to the legal argument about this statute and interpreting it, I'm wondering, as a starting point, what instructions did the trial court provide to the jury that did find this defendant?
No, there was no jury. I waived the jury and tried to restrict it to the trial court.
Waiver of trial. Waiver. I'm sorry. You waived. Okay, so what? So there's no, the court just, all right, so you just have the statute.
There was a rule point requested at the close of the state's case that was renewed at the end of my case, and in the Rule 29, I argued exactly what we argued
okay.
to the Court of Appeals. I knew that with the facts of the case, we weren't going to say
right. We just have the issue from the two courts. Okay.
Yes.
Was there evidence that the decedent refused the defendant's urging to get medical care? I took it that there was not, that I didn't see that. You mentioned that she didn't like to go, but
pardon? The defendant testified that her mother refused medical care. The defendant testified in the case to that extent. And there were other witnesses, friends and neighbors that came in and testified that Rosella Flante did not give any evidence or smell of her condition.
Does a son or daughter have any obligation to make sure that the parent obtains medical treatment, even if they don't want to get it?
A moral obligation, I would say.
No legal obligation that you know of.
The way I interpret this statute, none. There is no statute that says that. This is the only statute that I know of that even can remotely be considered on that point. And Your Honor, the problem that we have here is if the state prevails, we are all in jeopardy with our parents, particularly when we don't live near our parents. In this case, we have one of the views of this case is that we have a woman who is living with her mother in the same house. So we know that obviously that person knows what's going on in her life. But what if you're living in Elyria, Ohio, and your mother is living in Mentor, Ohio, 2 hours away?
Is it your argument then that we have no responsibility to our aged and infirm parents?
We have a responsibility, absolutely. But certainly
well,
not under this statute.
I'm talking about a legal responsibility provided for in 0.21.
I don't think under this statute, Your Honor. I think the legislature needs to provide the people of this state
now,
with a statute.
I would like you to address 0.22 and how does section 0.22 relate back to 21 when we're dealing with aging parents? How can you look at
it? It has nothing to do with parents. It's an endangering children statute.
So then how does the committee note have any effect on 21 when we're dealing with aging parents?
There are two answers to that. First, the committee note contemplates that this statute is about financial support. This is the deadbeat daddy statute. This is why what we do to people when they don't pay their support and they continue to disobey domestic relations court's orders about support. They state in the second paragraph of their comment, unlike some former statutes, this section deals only with non-support and contains no element of neglect or abuse. And we have a neglect and abuse argument here. The second thing is that the 2919.22, the Endangering Children Statute, is for children. It has nothing to do with adults. Nothing to do with adults.
Then is there any statute
no.
that pertains to abuse or neglect of aged parents?
Yes.
And what would that statute be?
Any of the criminal statutes that have to do with assault, that have to do with the battery, that sort of thing. The problem here is that...
How can neglect of an aged parent fall under any of those statutes?
You use the word neglect and abuse, and under abuse, I don't think under neglect. There needs to be some statute that will pertain to this that will cover this.
So under neglect, then you know of no statute that provides a legal responsibility.
If there had been a statute, Your Honor, The defendant was charged with involuntary manslaughter with a predicate misdemeanor offense being the criminal non-support. Had there been a neglect statute or an abuse statute that the state could abuse to get to the involuntary manslaughter, I'm sure they would have used it. But our prosecutor in Lorain County chose this one, and I'm saying it is a stretch. And it's a stretch not only from the standpoint that the legislature didn't intend non-financial support to be contemplated in this statute, but it's a stretch because of the ramifications that it leaves us all in this state. And this court has an opportunity to do something about it. It's almost a public policy thing here. We need, in this day and age, with parents living longer, with the medical care that's available to us all, we're all in harm's way if this statute is interpreted the way it is.
But maybe the General Assembly has not done so because of the very problems that you point out. The ramifications would be endless.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
What is your argument to your brief? What's your response to the per materia argument? And the holder, as you know, used to put 04 and .21 together.
The holder argument, the per materia argument, it involves domestic relations cases. It's chapter 31, and I can only say to you that I believe that the notion and the statute that says that the courts should interpret laws and penalties strictly against the state of Ohio, I think that is a more compelling argument here. First of all, the statute that Holder relies on has to do with children. And it has to do with what a parent has to do when they are found guilty of non-support under the criminal non-support statute. If they want to get out on bond, if they don't want to go to jail, then they have to give certain guarantees. And among those guarantees are that they're going to pay child support, they're going to have a roof over their head for their children, that sort of thing. So I don't think it really applies.
What do we do with the words other dependent? That's a very broad term.
Yeah. That might be referring to the other dependents, meaning handicapped children, 21 years or younger, that sort of thing.
And no question that the use of the word care there would apply to this situation. If we
you mean care applying to medical treatment?
Necessary or proper home care. The person pledges that they're going to provide necessary proper home care, food, and clothing. That's obviously a broader term than support that's
yes,
used in point
yes.
21. It's a little difficult to... the one thing we learned from this case is the General Assembly needs to look at elder care, certainly, and do some comprehensive...
Well, I think Justice Douglas is absolutely correct. I think they'll stay away from it because it's such a painful...
But the problem is we're left with this stuff, and, I mean, this is really difficult to try to apply these statutes to a situation that the General Assembly should have contemplated and said something about more... Seems to me more expressly.
Yeah, there's another thought on that, Your Honor, and that is that when a man is $30,000 behind in his child support from a divorce case that was 20 years ago in Cuyahoga County, we go after him with this statute. It's very definable. You either paid it or you didn't.
Sure.
But when you start talking about you didn't take care of your mother, you didn't take her to the hospital when you were supposed to have, then you get into a very, very subjective area.
You make the threshold high that people aren't called into court because if you say they live in Arizona and their parent is here, maybe they missed something. But you can take it certainly right legislation that can anticipate a lot of factual situations. So,
thank you.
Mr. Kurtz, you saved about a minute and a half of your time.
This case is not about just specific facts of this case. There were numerous medical findings. In fact, the odor that was testified that was so strong that emergency room physicians of 18 years experience had to go out and vomit. The defendant athlete was put on notice that this woman was in dire straits and needed medical attention. So,
Mr. Kurtz, what about the scenario that could play out, whether it happened here or not, of a parent who says, who's snarly and says, I'm going nowhere.
Well,
I'm not going to the doctor, I don't believe in him, and don't you touch me, and...
Factually, I don't think that's the case. But in answer to your question, I still believe, if you look at it from a dependent's point of view, if the child would say that to you, obviously the duty still exists.
Yeah, and that's a huge difference here, isn't it? Because children are subject to parents. And
I understand. But if someone is aged or infirmate, or not capable, as a standard...
Now you'd want to talk incompetent, maybe. Can't make their own decisions.
Or not capable of taking care of themselves. That's what the statute provides. Then I think this particular statute kicks in. And the Pandora's box argument that Mr. Haynes has made could... Obviously, that's a concern. But a child who has to owe a duty to an aged or affirmed parent can make arrangements. Well, we're just mincing words here. What does adequate support mean? Adequate support means that person is taken care of. That's the state's position. Mr. Haynes has gone so far as to say, and you can see that adequate support means putting a roof over someone's head.
I assume there was no evidence here about indicating that the decedent did not have adequate insurance to pay for her medical care, and that was a financial implication to the defendant. I didn't see that.
No, there was no financial harm to this elderly defendant from providing care, necessary care. And the evidence that Mr. Haynes cites as to that the deceased swore off medical treatment, it is not appropriate and clear on the record, because when the deceased arrived at the hospital, there was no talking to the deceased. She was unconscious, she was not in a position to say that. The other individuals who testified in that realm were found to not be credible.
You've used your time, Mr. Perkins. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.